The Sunday Scripture Podcast is a weekly look at the scripture passage coming up on Sunday morning. I'm Joe Cate, and I'm joined by three of my favorite people to talk to on any subject. My brother-in-law, Carl, from Clover, my brother-in-law, Shane, from Elgin, and one of my best friends in ministry, Brad, who serves with his wife, Megan, at Bethel UMC in downtown Spartanburg. Welcome back to the Sunday Scripture Podcast. We got Shane, we got Carl, we got Brad, and we have two parables, one of which we read somewhere around September of last year, the parable of the workers in the vineyard. The reason we will come across the same text on this recording and also in Sunday worship is because Brad and I will utilize different sources to pick our texts. Sometimes we pick the lectionary, which is a walk through a gospel for the better part of a year. It's not a calendar year. It's Advent through the summer. Advent beginning 4 weeks before Christmas. Matthew, Mark, Luke walks through them, and then has some other gospels on really high holidays. We sometimes do that. We sometimes are reading a book. We sometimes are using what's called the narrative lectionary. We use that where we walk way more Old Testament texts that tie into the New Testament texts. Then this time, what we're doing in the season of Lent is a theme called Foolish Love. Those different scripture picking models are unconcerned with duplicating the text. So we're going to come across that periodically. The upside of having that is the new layers that we find each time that we read it. Parable professors and seminary will tell you, you have not solved the parable. You will read it in a different context of ministry. You will read it in a different context of your life. You'll read it in a different group. As our group has changed throughout the years in reading this, you will hear different things. So we count on that and count on your willingness to hear the new and hear these new things. Matthew 20, starting with verse 1. The kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius for the day, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, "You also go out into the vineyard, and I'll pay you whatever is right." So they went. When he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same. And about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around, and he said to them, "Why are you standing here idle all day?" They said to him, "Because no one's hired us." He said to them, "You also go into the vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, "Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and going to the first." When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received a denarius. Now, when the first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them received a denarius. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." But he replied to one of them, "Friend, am I doing you no wrong? Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I'm generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. Shane, what'd you see?
Jealousy. So where I question this is, those who worked all day expected more, but he says to the people at lunch or wherever that I will pay you what is right. So the beginning workers in the vineyard agreed to a price or a payment. And then the second or third, he's like, I will pay you what is right. So I just saw jealousy over what the first were paid or the last were paid over the first.
Yeah, and have you ever been concerned about what someone else was making?
Me, no, personally, but I know in where I work, when you hire somebody, so the current labor market has shifted since COVID. So now, gig economy and everybody's paying, to get talent. There's no secrets. So if you bring somebody in that brand new that might be making 50 cents more than somebody that's been there 5 years, it's not a secret. So I think industry is really, really struggling with, if you're going to pay a new person to get talent a little bit more, you got to bring the rest up to the same speed. And it's to get just getting extremely costly for labor in the manufacturing market. And I think all companies are suffering through that. Me personally, no, I've never been concerned with what others have made, peers or elsewise. I've been fortunate enough to be compensated what I think to be a fair amount. And to just know what somebody else is being compensated, it just drives a wedge between what your purpose is versus, trying to say that you're better than somebody else. And some people's contributions to the company or the purpose is compensated according to what the market is. Not saying anybody's worth more than the other, but I mean, a doctor salary makes significantly more than what I do. So it's, based off of the market.
So Shane points out something that's, I think, a device used in the storytelling. And that is that when he comes out later in the day, he tells them, I will pay you whatever is right. He doesn't say the actual price, but as we listen to the story, we do the math in our head. We're already doing that as we're listening to the story. I'll pay you whatever is right. Well, whatever is right would be a little bit less than a denarius, right? That's what's happening in this device of the storytelling. And so then at the end of the story, we're surprised that the landowner is going to pay everybody the actual same amount, even though the last group just worked an hour. And so I think Shane was onto something with that, what I would consider a really interesting way of telling this story, because we fill in the blanks ourselves. And I guess my question to Brad is, the audience listening to this parable, are they making the same judgment as we are? Or are they jumping to that same conclusion?
I would think yes, they are. I mean that their surprise, our surprise at the end would be mirrored by their surprise of hearing that concept of not having worked a full day, but yet earning a full day's worth of wage, which is really what people needed to exist on for a family. I mean, again, you're talking about a society in which one person was bringing home all the money in order to be able for the family to live and to exist. So it was crucial. That these folks were recipients of that money. A few other things kind of jump out to me. Like there is an assumption that we make that the people, that some of these folks just were standing around all day. And while it says that about the evening, or the ones that were hired sort of last, right? That it does say that they were out there and they asked him, why have you been standing out here all day? Because no one has hired us. Like that's true for them, maybe not true for the others. Like some people could have been working someplace else and then just showed up to be able to. So we always walk into these stories with some assumptions that we're making. The topic for this week is that foolish love is unfair. And so that's sort of where the focus of this passage is as you read this, this definitely is not a very fair way of doing things in our eyes, obviously in the eyes of the workers who worked all day. You know, Shane nailed it. It's jealousy. You know, they're going to look and say, that's not fair, is what they would say.
So let me press that point. I experience Shane as singularly focused as well. He's unconcerned with what you're up to, unless we're collaborating or we're just having fun hanging out. Like, he's just doing what he's doing. So he's not, I wouldn't guess you would do that. What I want to press is to consider, Carl, let me throw you a curveball NFL trivia question. What is the difference between the ownership group of the Panthers, 20 minutes from where you live, and the ownership group of the Green Bay Packers, hundreds of thousands of miles away?
My understanding of the Packers organization is that they are owned by the fans, by the mm-hmm. public, and the Carolina Panthers are an ownership group led by a majority shareholder who just raised ticket prices for next season after having the worst season ever last year.
Yeah, we and I can put you in a position to if we just talk about the style of the group, because there's something horrible about that man. He can make a unilateral decision. The Green Bay Packers sell stock to their fans, and those fans are represented by a board. And that board has an executive board that makes the critical decisions. The people that were hired at 6 a.m. think that they are on the executive board, that they should be in on who's paid what and when. Now, they're not, they don't have that whole framework. They don't have that whole thing set up. But the feeling is the same. We have been here long enough. We have done enough work on this site, on this day, that we should have input on what happens. I likened it tonight to a lane on the interstate. You've been in that lane for 5 miles, therefore you own that lane. This is my lane of this interstate. You didn't lay any of the concrete. You didn't choose where the interstate was going to go. You didn't blow through the mountains with dynamite. I don't know if they still do that. It sure seems like it in some of those locations. But you sure are driving on it right now. And that's the feeling that I get from them. Sure, we have covered. The feeling that I would want is the safety and security of having been hired and working and getting that money. But what you trade is the unknown of what he will do with the other people. And you want both. I want the security and I want to dictate what others should get. And Brad, you've read it many times. You've preached on it many times. Did you see anything this time? Oh, all right. Sorry. Before you do that, there's a third category, Carl, that somebody pointed out tonight that either didn't recall or whatever. I'll pay you denarius. I'll pay you what's fair. The third category just says go. Just go out there. He didn't even say he's going to pay them, which I had not noted. So, Brad, what'd you see?
The grumbling when they received the, and I guess it's verse 11, when they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. I think that's what our feeling of being wronged or perception of being wronged, and, you know, having that idea of like life's not fair, we immediately kind of get to that point of grumbling, that complaining, that murmuring against God, wanting things to be different. That sort of stuck out to me.
You know, and Joe, something that I noticed in this reading that I didn't notice in September's reading, I think maybe I'm being more critical. I'm observing the vineyard owner here. And he said, "Why have you been standing here all day doing nothing?" "Well, no one has hired us," they answered. Well, if they had been there all day, why didn't he hire them early in the morning? They weren't there all day.
We walked through that and kept changing our minds tonight. We asked each other, did he hire everyone that was out there at 6 a.m.? And then did he hire everyone that was out there at 9 a.m.? We think he did. If he did, then you're right. I haven't been out there all day. Is he exaggerating? This is kind of bleeding into my favorite segment of the podcast for Brad is unanswerable questions, of which Brad then says it isn't in there, which is what we kept saying at dinner tonight. That is not there. My wife Katie asked, did the workers hired first work so little given the assurance that he kept having to hire people? What do you think of that? And the later people worked harder.
I mean, that's a great observation. Like, why? Well, I mean, again,
it's not there.
Yeah, it's not there. I mean, and that's the beauty of these passages is that we can kind of read into them as long as we hold them loosely. Like, again, I would always remind people, like, this isn't real. This is a story that Jesus made up to make a point. And I don't think it's wrong for us to add to that story as long as we hold it loosely to where we could go, yeah, I mean, it was in the season in which the harvest had to be brought in. Like, they had such a small window of time in order to harvest this crop. And if they missed it, so like, he's definitely going to hire people. And so the first ones hired could have been busting their tails, working as hard as they could, and they still needed more. You would think though, that every time a new truck showed up, that people would go, "Oh, thank the Lord, more people."
Mm-hmm.
Right. There should be some kind of celebratory, like, "Oh good, at least we're getting help." You know, but no, we're going to focus in more on the tension of what happens about getting paid.
This reminds me of when my daughter played club soccer and our soccer coach would have scrimmages and he would have, a lot of times the girls always loved to have the parents play, adults against the kids. And as they grew older, they were better soccer players. So it got complicated. And what the coach would do if one team was up, like by a couple of goals, he would allow more people to join on the other team so the parents could add more players. So it would be 12 or 13 against 11. And then, of course, we would start having the advantage as parents and we'd start evening it up and actually winning the game. Part of that is more people, but then also fresher people. So you've got the people who came in at 5 o'clock. They're actually fresher and probably worked just as hard as those who were hired at 9 when they first got there. So the owner of the vineyard is getting a pretty good level of effort, possibly, by bringing in more people like that, sort of in shifts.
Yeah, but what's the markup on the wine? If he keeps hiring and hiring and hiring, he's getting a benefit out of it, right? I mean, there's a cost break analysis here. You know, if you're going to pay the what is fair or the agreed upon wage, the markup on the wine has to be greater than that, does it not?
Here's a word that I had at the end of our lesson. A story, like many parables, is disruptive. It's disruptive of financial and wage expectations. So potentially it's a reckless business decision. Potentially it's a good business decision. If you were speculating on that, Brad, where would you lean?
I mean, I think it shows the abundant nature of God, which is the point that Jesus is trying to make with the story. But Shane, I love that. I love that reading of it, of going, like, logically, he's going to have to raise prices because he's got to pay more employees. So therefore, the cost isn't going to come out of the landowner's pocket. The cost is going to come out of those who are consuming whatever product that they're producing. I mean, again, all of that makes absolute logical sense, which is perfect to be able to then talk about the abundant and extravagant nature and really the unreasonableness or the unfairness of this foolish love that we talk about with God.
I'll give you another comparison. When someone said, is this the worst labor manager we've ever heard of? Because he just keeps having to go back out there. Why not get more and more? It's a fair question. Again, with limited answers.
So it's funny. That's an interesting question. And when I listen to this parable and when I read it, I'm being critical of the landowner, but actually the landowner is just being generous and he's looking for an opportunity to be even more generous. He's getting the wine out of all this, but I mean, he's just going to provide opportunity for people as they need it. And so why are we so jealous that he's being generous? As a matter of fact, he even says that, right?
Yeah.
So this is the comp that I want you to consider is Schindler's List. In Schindler's List, obviously the Nazis are rounding up primarily Jewish people, but a number of different types of people that the Nazi regime has deemed unworthy in every way, and that they should go. They should work until they die, or we should actively kill them. Schindler risks his life to create a factory, if I remember correctly, to make munitions for the German soldiers. He leverages every financial advantage he has to continue to hire more people, and I'm pretty sure they make malfunctioning artillery. He just keeps hiring to pull people out, and at the end, when they celebrate him, he's still despondent. He could not have hired more. Where do you see similarities in that, and where do you see differences in that?
I mean, I think it's a good observation. It's a good comparison. That's a great image to sort of hammer home what, you know, I think would be the hope of the landowner. Would to be to hire as many people as possible in order to be able to provide them the what they need in order to survive. It doesn't seem to be about the job as much as it is about the ability to provide the needs that are there in his community. Mm-hmm.
The urgent life and death is not close to the same, but having that job can be life or death in the long term, in terms of food. I wonder, Brad, if we talked about the sower that scattered seed, if we talked about this story where he gathers more and more people with a pay that's slightly different, and what we're about to read about a shepherd and the sheep. If Jesus gives professional examples that people would understand and says, it's just like this, right? And his example is absurd. I wonder if the people in those professions hear those examples and think, what? No, I would never do that. And that's the point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the point, is to use something that the people would have understood to make a heavenly point.
And so what does that mean? What does that first phrase mean? And I asked Brad this in September. A lot of his parables start with, for the kingdom of heaven is like. The kingdom of heaven, is this where we're going to be, or is this how we should be now?
I mean, I think it's God's desire for us now, and also what it will be like in the future.
And if the point is to impact their behavior in that moment, he's putting a strong emphasis on impacting their personal decisions today in order to bring out those concepts in a struggling, grumpy, desperate, greedy world.
It's extremely radical.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I mean, let's also be clear that he's trying to explain, you know, the nature of God and God's desire, not so that the people would go out and do this. Like, he's not saying, hey, go be like this landowner. He's like saying, oh no, this is what God is like. This is the God that you are claiming to follow. This is the God that is the God of the universe. This is my Father. This is what he's like. And if he's like that, then that would impact the way in which we live out attempting to follow God. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Whoa. Yeah. So, okay. All right. So today, right, in today's society, and it's been for many, many years, is we earn an hourly rate, right? So back then, I'm assuming, you know, people were compensated via, you know, the rate or food or privilege or whatever based on the job. So regardless if you've been there all day long or you've been there just for a few hours, you were compensated. So, I mean, is it basically saying, you know, if you do this, you'll be granted this in return?
Yeah, I don't think it. I think people's nature is to be transactional, and I think it's disruptive to that transactional expectation. If this, then this. And he's saying, God's kingdom is beyond that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not articulating it right, but that's what I mean. So, you know, when as Carl mentioned, you know, we view it as, you know, jealousy, or I, you know, we're all in agreement that, or I think that it was jealousy because the people that have been there all day should be compensated more than those that just started at the end, you know, worked an hour or two. But we're saying that God says it doesn't matter how you work as long as you, I guess in this term, believe or, you know, follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's that generosity, that erasing of the ledger generates a great deal of anger. One small point I'm considering being a large point on building into Sunday is that the number of times you say he went out. He went out early. He went out again. He went out at 9 o'clock, whereas the people are idle and he is active. He is pursuing. That is a, and the broken sadness of being idle. I've been idle before, and I've been hoping that someone else would do something, hoping that someone else would be active in the situation that I'm in, and sitting in that idleness. It's about the worst possible outcome. And to read that this owner is going out is interesting to me to start the week. Is there anything else? Okay. Very short one in comparison, the parable of the lost sheep. What we read was Matthew 20. I believe they're really thinking about going into Jerusalem. They're right on the edge of Jerusalem at the end of 20. We're backing up to Matthew 18, the parable of the lost sheep. Jesus says, "Take care that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I tell you, in heaven, their angels continually see the face of my Father in heaven." What do you think? If a shepherd has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, he rejoices over it more than the other 99 that never went away.
So, Joe, I'm reminded of the parable of the prodigal son.
Yeah. Here.
It's the same. It's the same message.
And what is that?
And that is, well, and you know what? In the prodigal son, there was some jealousy going on there too, I guess, right? But
yes.
When the prodigal son comes back after, you know, spending all his money and being irresponsible, when he comes back, the father is elated and he throws a huge party for his lost son is now returned. So this is the same thing. It reminds me of the same thing. The 99 didn't go anywhere. They stayed. They did what they were expected. I mean, they're sheep, but they did what is expected of them. The other knucklehead took off. The shepherd left us up here. We had to kind of herd ourselves for a while. And the shepherd left and he's back with this one and he's rejoicing because this one wandered off and he had to go get him. So to me, it's the same story. It's the same message.
So interesting enough, like the reason it's the same message in your mind is probably because Luke's version of this story is in the same chapter as the prodigal son. So in Luke's version of this very same story, Matthew, Luke, probably written around the same time. Both of them use Mark and another source in order to kind of write their gospels as well as their own take on things. We read Matthew's version, but in Luke's version, it's the story of the lost sheep, the story of the lost coin, and the story of the lost son. And those are all found in Luke 15. Matthew doesn't have those other two stories. Instead, he just simply has this one, and he ties this one in with them wondering about who the greatest is. And he uses the child. He brings the children before him. And so that's the reference at the beginning that Joe read, "See that you do not despise one of these little ones," in that it's that God cares for everyone. And it's the celebratory nature of the one being found in God's mind, or in the mind of the community, rather than the 99 that stayed put.
So let's do similarities and differences between that and prodigal. Similarity is somebody got loose. There was potential for death, loss that you would never see them again. Differences. The father of the prodigal stayed home and the prodigal came home. The shepherd went to pursue. Carl, you mentioned the brother was upset because he's got to put that work in. He was, you know, he's one of those 6 a.m. guys that's out there working, and the brother is not. Whereas the sheep are probably indifferent other than being left. I think I must always read Luke when I read this. So, Brad, when you read, "In heaven, there are angels continually..." Well, let me back that up. You mentioned children. So Matthew 18 begins with the disciples asking Jesus, "Who's the greatest?" You could certainly read that and say, are they asking among themselves? Are they asking about all time? Is this, one of those clips of ESPN, you see on swipe up on social media where they're trying to get your attention and arguing over this stuff. Who are they asking about themselves? They're asking about a much larger group. Jesus surprises them by getting a child who would be marginalized on the edge of that crowd and pushes, kind of nudges them into the middle of the circle. A child is likely humble. A child is likely quiet. A child is likely biting its lip and turning into Jesus's leg. It's not authoritative. It's not have the gear that the religious leaders who are following them wondering what he's going to do, what they have. He doesn't have, the kid doesn't have the time that they've all been following Jesus to this point and desperately hoping to seek his approval, get his wisdom, all that stuff. It's just a child. And Jesus says, you treat this child as if he was me. Everything you're thinking about me, I need you to associate with this child. In the middle of 18, he says, if you trip up one of these people that's interested in hearing me, that may potentially follow me, better to have a millstone around your neck and get tossed in a lake. Better lose your hands, better lose your eyes, better lose your foot than to trip these people up. You're talking about someone vulnerable. And then the final part is what we read, which is the lost sheep, and the sheep is vulnerable out in the woods. No one has tripped it up. It's made its own choice. But so that's that whole setup of 18. The thing that I have not noticed as I've read the lost sheep, probably because I've read Luke, is a phrase I was going to ask you about, Brad. In heaven, and speaking of these children, these little ones, in heaven, their angels continually see the face of my Father in heaven. What does that mean, in your opinion?
So it represents like a closeness with God. The idea of being able to see God's face, you remember, like Old Testament wise, nobody was able to see God's face. You remember Moses had to put a veil on in order to be able to, you know, even see God as God passed by. There was just no way in which a human being could look upon God. But there is the angels who can see the face of the Father in heaven. And so really, in essence, what he's saying is that there is a closeness there of these little ones, that they're close to the kingdom of heaven. Does that make sense?
Yeah, in that moment. Right. They are seeing him in that moment. Because one of the questions was, is this about guardian angels? Is this people watching over those children? Or yeah, is it those children seeing him in this moment?
So there is a concept of, in the Jewish tradition, they did have a concept of, at least some people had a concept of guardian angels. But it's very different from, you know, the ones that are on our shoulders and protecting us kind of mentality. Like that's very different than the cliche stuff that we deal with today.
Okay.
So for a second there, Joe, I was thinking in terms of the angels being childlike. The angels see the face of God, and then he references the child.
Yeah, it's their angels, though. There's a possessive there. So it's their, the verse that it says, for I tell you that their angels, referring to the little ones' angels in heaven, always see the face of my Father in heaven, which is
their angels. I thought,
again, it is, yeah.
I thought it was they are, or yeah. There are,
yeah.
Instead of there as in possessive. Got it.
Yeah, it's a possessive. So, which is, again, Jewish people believed in guardian angels. Like, that is something that existed. So it's kind of lost on us a little bit.
Big point. He's spending a great deal of time in this chapter telling people who are clamoring for authority and following him, and who's going to sit at your right hand, and who's going to be within a couple of feet of you, and what are the implications of this afterwards? And he says, I need you to have the vulnerability and love of these children the way this shepherd would chase this sheep. Shane, I've asked you this before. You've told us before. Tell me again, how many pieces do you generate in your manufacturing plant each day?
Injection molding, we do 28 to 32 million a day. In tubes, we do roughly 3 million a day. And in rubber, we do about 18 to 20 million a day.
And your success rate is what percentage?
Success rate in hitting that volume?
In the number of that volume that is a usable functioning part.
99.1%.
All right. So need you chasing that other 0.9.
That's what my bosses tell me every day.
according to the text. If we made this text about how your plant is like, hey man, this guy, look, he's making 3 million a day. Okay. We're set. We're good. He's saying, I need you to pursue these children at a higher percentage than you've ever pursued anything in your life. What do you think is the typical place of children in this era, Brad?
Definitely not very high. Children did not have, they were very low on the pecking order. They were considered to be wild. They were dependent. They were unable to do their own thing. And so, not very, well thought of.
Disruptive. Everything we've read, tonight is odd. One thing I asked him with the shepherd, if you were a 46-year-old shepherd, you might be thinking of everything that could go wrong with those 99. If you're a 13-year-old shepherd, are you a little more reckless? What do you think of how would you measure the recklessness versus the, whatever the opposite of recklessness is, planning, measured response of the shepherd going after the one?
Like how old the shepherd is?
Do you think he's young? Do you think he's a little more reckless than what he would be at this age guarding the sheep?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I haven't thought about that as far as what the shepherd, reckless is a good word. Reckless is the word that you would use. I just reading back through this, it's so strange the way in which Matthew tells this story or has Jesus tell him this story, because he asks the question, what do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hill and go to look for the one that has wandered off? And then there's a question mark there. And everybody answers themselves, heck no.
No, I would not. Right.
Right. Like he stays there with the 99 and he counts out that one loss and is just and accepts that just as much as Shane's, you know, boss accepts the fact that 99.1% of everything works and is functional. Because logically for us, the fair thing to do is to forget the one and to focus on the 99.
Yeah.
And Jesus says, that's not the way God is. That's not the way of the Father. The Father wants everyone and is going to go after that one.
Mm-hmm.
So is the starfish on the beach analogy applicable here too? Y'all have heard man on the beach and their starfish are all up on the beach and he reaches down and he tosses one back in the ocean. And somebody said, why are you throwing that in? You, the whole beach is covered in them. It's a loss. And they would say something like, yeah, but not for that guy. This starfish is fine because we saved this one.
I just ruined the whole story.
It's not told that way.
You've never heard that, Joe?
What do you mean you ruined it?
I didn't tell it right.
Is it like a 2-hour version of it?
No. I put Carl's spin on it. Brad, how's the story go? It's much more simple than that.
I mean, that's pretty much the story. It's pretty simple. Yeah, it's pretty simple. And that's going to be in Joe's sermon on Sunday, just so everybody knows, because he's going to go find that and be like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever.
He's like, hey, y'all, we're talking about starfish. Opening image today is starfish.
Yeah.
Carl, do you think the shepherd has even the slightest ownership stake in the sheep?
The answer, I guess, I don't know why I even paused. Absolutely. And I think that's mandatory.
You do?
I don't know that a shepherd who has no ownership in the sheep cares.
That's what I wonder. Was he paid to do this? Is it his sheep? It's not in
sheep.
There.
It's his sheep. Yeah, it's not in there.
Brad, what do you think?
I mean, if we're talking about reckless and it not making sense, then heck no, it's not his sheep.
Right.
Right. I mean, let's go ahead and strain all sense of what we think is right and justified in that, of like, oh no, let's just add another layer of the chaos that ensues here. No, it's not his sheep. He's a paid worker. In fact, he just showed up and he's still making a lot more money.
now hang on. I want to push back on that. I want to push back on that. They're his sheep. One has wandered off. He cares so much about all of them. He has gone to find that one, taking the risk that the others may also wander off or come victim to a predator. I see it as him literally loving this sheep and all of them, and will go and get that one to bring it back to the flock. That's how I see it. I just wonder
if he's paid to do it or if it's his sheep.
No, it's his sheep.
What you said is still true.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not in there. But this is the beauty of these stories, is like, no, we don't know the details of that point because it's not real.
Yeah. This is the point of the podcast where you say these are not intended to be pulled apart for 45 minutes, as we have just
No, so. But I mean, by pulling them apart, we hope that people are listening and can take something from them, right?
Exactly.
That there's some different way. Like, this is the parable. This is the imagery that I use all the time. The parable is like a gemstone, and there has so many different facets to it. And so every time you shift it, you turn it, you're seeing something new. And so, you know, maybe just an offhand dumb comment that we made tonight could be like, oh. No, I've never thought about that before.
That's or a deeply insightful one.
Yeah, I mean, come on now. We don't have a lot of those. Like, that's the one sheep that we're looking for.
It starts with, take care that you do not despise one of these little ones. If one of those got loose and you're already concerned and there's predators in the field, you say, I cannot believe you got loose. I was in Syracuse 3 weeks ago, and our cat is always looking to break for the door, even though he's fed, loved, nurtured, tolerated, celebrated. He's looking to break for the door. And I'm not going to make crazy disparaging comments about door security of the people that took over that responsibility in my absence. But he found a loop and he got out. He got out. And then the dog broke for it. They both broke for it. The dog, who's one of the most obedient creatures that's ever existed on this earth, that's not bias. That is a fact. Is an obedient little brown, beautiful creature. He got loose. He didn't come back for 90 minutes. And my family set up at the front door and the back door with blankets in a chair, hoping he would come back. I didn't know any of this because I was in Syracuse. You would curse that beautiful little animal for what he did. And to say, take care you do not despise these little ones. And then he gives an example of that animal putting every single thing at risk, yet you go pursue. That's something. We did not meet next week at Three Friends because I'll be in New York again. Be back in 2 weeks to meet there. We will have a recording. I expect us to record next week. We'll be continuing in this series called Foolish Love that starts on Valentine's Day and ends on April Fool's Day, the season of Lent, where we are exploring ways in which we can just make tiny adjustments and start to welcome other people in, welcome ourselves in to this family that has the relentless pursuit of the Father chasing us. So thank you, Brad. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Shane. Thank you, everyone, for downloading, streaming the podcast. I was late putting the sermon up, so it went up just 10 minutes before this thing's going to go up. So look for that back-to-back. The sermon link is always going to have a hyperlink to Brad and Megan's church, their main page on YouTube to watch their services. I encourage you to go and watch that. Have a great week. Join us again next week.